Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. In the past year, California has created thousands of new units of housing for homeless people living on the streets. The initiative, known as HomeKey, was launched by investing billions of dollars as the pandemic began. It's the fastest expansion of homeless housing in state history, but there are questions about equity, whether it's serving those who need it most, and if the funding to convert hotels, motels, and other kinds of housing for the homeless is sustainable in the long term. That's what's coming up next on Forum, right after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. Well, it seems like forever ago, but last June, as the pandemic was tightening its grip on us, California Governor Gavin Newsom announced an initiative he called HomeKey. Its goal? Convert thousands of hotel and motel rooms into long-term housing for people living on the streets. In the past year, nearly 6,000 units have been created across the state, able to house more than 8,000 people. Now, Newsom and the legislature want to spend billions more on HomeKey, securing and converting more units into housing. And so this hour, we're talking about this statewide effort to address homelessness almost a year into the initiative. We're going to have a whole panel with us throughout the hour, but joining me first is KQED housing reporter Aaron Baldessari, who's been digging into this issue for us. And Aaron, welcome.
Hey, Scott. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. So let's begin by giving us all a little bit of a context of this. Before the pandemic, there was a homeless crisis for decades, really. Describe what was happening, you know, just as 2020 was dawning. I mean, this is something that was very much on certainly mayor's and the governor's agenda.
Absolutely. You know, homelessness was the crisis in California before the pandemic, and it was the issue for Newsom before the pandemic. California has 161,000 people homeless on any given night in California. It's a quarter of the homeless population in the nation live in California. Half of the nation's unsheltered homeless residents live in California. And this was a top concern among voters, right? So we know that polls for a couple years now have found that homelessness is one of the top two concerns among voters. In fact, this year it actually eclipsed traffic and housing affordabilities more generally as the most important issue for likely Bay Area voters. You know, and for Newsom, he made it the sole focus of his State of the State address in 2020. It's really an issue that's followed him since he was mayor of San Francisco. And so, you know, these two things together made California really uniquely positioned to respond when the pandemic hit, particularly with respect to its unsheltered residents.
And of course, you mentioned that cities have been grappling with this for decades now. San Francisco, Oakland, LA, Sacramento, San Diego, everyone really. But I'm assuming that there are homeless all over the state. They're just maybe more visible and maybe bigger in numbers and certainly more dense than in cities than they are, say, in the Central Valley or more rural or even suburban areas.
Sure, that's true. But, you know, this is an issue that rural counties have been grappling with. And I think that they had been struggling with how to respond to homelessness in their communities, prior to the pandemic, and feeling like maybe all of the state dollars were going to those big cities like San Francisco and Oakland and to LA region. And so I think, you know, when HomeKey rolled out in June of last year, there was a real effort paid to make sure that these dollars would be spread throughout the state.
So before HomeKey in April of 2020, so we're about a month into the pandemic, Governor Newsom announces first Project RoomKey. And tell us what that initial program was intended to do.
Right. So when the pandemic hit, the governor's administration responded very quickly to begin a program that would lease hotel rooms across California. I think the initial goal was 15,000. The idea was to bring seniors and people who are medically vulnerable to COVID inside so they could shelter in place and to reduce the capacity of congregate shelters and as well as encampments, because there was a big concern that the coronavirus would spread very rapidly in these congregate settings. And so that was the first California led the nation with this effort. The nation, quickly followed, and many other states picked up this model. And California's program was certainly larger than many other states as well. I think the question that arose almost, immediately, in the next breath after the governor announced this program, Project RoomKey, was what would happen once the hotels close. And, when he announced RoomKey, he said that it would be a jumping off point to permanent housing. And that was really followed up in June when he did announce HomeKey.
A little confusing. That's why I wanted to sort of roll it all out together.
Yeah, a lot of names there. But basically the idea was to then actually go ahead and buy some of these hotels that were already being used to house people experiencing homelessness. And so that was the intention behind HomeKey. What ended up happening actually was that most of them were hotel and motel conversions, but there's also single family houses, tiny homes, mobile homes. There's a new modular construction project in Mountain View. There were some apartment buildings purchased, even some former vacation rentals and some office conversions. So we really saw a wide variety of different programs with HomeKey by the time that counties and cities and housing authorities began submitting their applications for projects.
And so this is something that has been going on for the past year. And I think the initial goal was to acquire more than 90 buildings, converting those into housing. How is that going?
Well, there are 94 sites across the state, nearly 6,000 units, and people are for the most part moving into have moved into those sites. The goal is to actually have mostly permanent, housing in all of those sites. About half of them will be, are already permanent housing, or some of them are temporary shelters. And another half of them will have to be used as temporary shelters first before they convert to permanent housing.
That's so, KQED. Oops, sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
The road to get to permanent housing, I think, as our reporting shows, is often complicated.
Definitely. And we're going to get into some of those complications. It's KQED housing reporter Aaron Baldessari. Let's broaden the conversation out a bit and bring in Jason Elliott. He is a senior advisor on housing to Governor Gavin Newsom. Jason Elliott, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, pick up where Aaron left off, if you would. And I'm thinking, as this pandemic unfolded, did you and the administration sort of, that old expression, never let a good crisis go to waste? I mean, there was an opportunity. There was obviously a need, but there was also an opportunity, right?
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I have to give the explanation of home key and room key several times a day. And I will say, I think Aaron did a fantastic job of giving a synopsis. So I appreciate that. It's a good question, Scott. Let me just sort of take your listeners back to where we were in the beginning of the pandemic, because it starts to explain some of the context of where we are, right? March of 2020, if we can sort of go back in time and think back to that crazy, complicated, confusing moment at the beginning of the pandemic, where really nobody knew how this coronavirus thing was going to roll out and develop. You know, at the time, we were gathered in the state emergency operations center with a number of public health experts, doctors, and other folks. And we did some modeling that showed, and this was again when we didn't really know how COVID spread and we didn't really know how deadly it was going to be. We did some modeling that showed that we had potentially a few weeks to act. And if we didn't act or didn't act sufficiently, that we could lose the lives of more than 25,000 people experiencing homelessness in California because of the way we thought the COVID spread. So we were dealing with a very serious crisis, and we were dealing with a very imminent and urgent crisis. And I think your point is a good one, Scott, right? Don't ever let a crisis go to waste. But I will say, in those early days of the pandemic, we were in emergency response life-saving mode. And that's really what led to Project Roomkey, which was the leasing of hotels, which continues to this day, I should mention. Project Roomkey has in total, and this is the leasing of hotels, not the buying, but the leasing of hotels, we've served more than 42,000 people experiencing homelessness in California. That's about a fifth of what we estimate to be California's entire homeless population. So about one out of every five homeless people in California has benefited in some way, shape, or form from Project Roomkey. That program, in addition to a number of other factors and heroic efforts by outreach workers to get people vaccinated and tested and so forth, has meant that California really has not experienced, thank God, has not experienced the kind of death and impact of COVID among the homeless population that we feared. Yeah. So, you know, I think it was really responding to a very, very acute crisis at the time, and everything that's unfolded after that has sort of been evolutions of that program.
Well, and in some ways it was a perfect fit in the sense that with the pandemic, people weren't traveling as much. There were a lot of hotels and motels that were either closed or empty. But going forward, well, before we get to going forward, the mm-hmm. money to acquire these buildings, as we all know,
sure.
land, even abandoned land, is not mm-hmm. cheap in most parts of California. So where did the money come from? There was some federal mm-hmm. money at the beginning, right?
Yeah, the answer is that the home key, the first round of home key, which Aaron ably described, it was mostly all coronavirus relief funding from the federal government. And just a moment, the money that we are proposing now is a mix of federal funds and state general fund. And just for orders of magnitude, the state invested about $846 million in the last round of home key. $846 million. The governor is now proposing $7 billion for home key. So we're talking about orders of magnitude enhancements on what we can do with this program. And just a word on cost, because those numbers can sort of seem mind-boggling. But let's just talk about cost for a second. A traditional affordable housing or unit set aside for a person experiencing homelessness can very easily range over $550,000, $600,000, $700,000 to build that new unit. And not just the money, but the time. You can often be in the process of building that unit for 3 or 4 years at best. HomeKey has cut both of those cost and time factors down by orders of magnitude. The average state investment in a HomeKey unit has been about $148,000. In the Bay Area, that's a little higher. In some parts of California, like the Central Valley, that's a little bit lower.
Is there some matching funds from the local governments?
There were matching requirements in the first round of HomeKey, and it's a little bit complicated. But basically, the state would fund the entirety up to the first $100,000 of a purchase, and then local governments would match every dollar above $100,000 on a one-to-one basis. So in a number of places, there was no local match required because the cost to buy that unit and rehab it was less than $100,000. Yeah. And I just compare that $100,000, you know, or the $150,000, I should say, to $550,000, which is sort of a traditionally accepted number of how much it costs to build housing. But more than that, instead of 4 years, we're talking about bringing these units online in 6 months.
Okay, Jason, I'm gonna hold that thought because we have to take a quick break. Jason Elliott, senior counselor to Governor Gavin Newsom, is going to stick around for the hour. We're going to bring in additional guests, and we want to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts about this whole project, this plan, this idea. Give us a ring at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or Twitter and Facebook, we're at KQED Forum. Stick around.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
Welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this hour. We're talking about the initiative at the state level to get more homeless folks into permanent housing. The initiative is called Home Key. We're talking with Jason Elliott, senior counselor to Governor Gavin Newsom. Also with us, Aaron Baldessari, who covers housing for KQED and is delving in to examining the first year of this program. And joining us also, Tamika Moss, who is founder and chief executive of All Home. That's a homeless advocacy group. They've been advising Home Key. And Tamika, welcome. And also joining us, Heather. Also joining us, Heather Hood, vice president of the Northern California Enterprise Community Partners. That's a national nonprofit focusing on increasing the affordable housing supply. Heather, welcome to you as well. Jason, I want to come back to something you were talking about, and that was, you know, sort of cutting the costs and the time that it usually takes for these sorts of projects. And not to take away from the accomplishment at all, but we're talking about 161,000 people in California who are homeless. And I'm sure that's a kind of a rolling number. People move in and out of homelessness. And again, not to take away from Home Key, but I mean, do you see this as... I mean, you could say this is just a tiny fraction of what's needed. Mm-hmm. So how do you scale it up?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, by any objective measure, it is a tiny fraction of what's needed. I think that 6,000 units serving 8,000 people is just a start. And as you said, Scott, we've got 161,000 people on any given night experiencing homelessness in California. So it is a drop in the bucket, but it's an important drop in the bucket because it's starting. It's proving a model. It's showing us a path to do things better, to do things more efficiently and effectively. And ultimately, as Aaron's reporting showed this morning, it has set a national model. And President Biden, we're very proud of the fact, has put $5 billion into the American Rescue Plan to expand this program nationwide. So I think there's no arguing the assertion that 6,000 units is just a fraction of what we need. But I'll tell you, you know, for the 8,000 people who are moving into those units, this is literally the difference between life and death. And so, you know, while it's not nearly as much as we need, it's certainly the most important or one of the most important things that's ever happened in the lives of the folks who are able to benefit from these units and those who love them and care about them. So I think, as I mentioned before the break, the Home Key round one was $846 million. We're now proposing $7 billion. So I would just sort of respond to your point by completely agreeing and saying it's not enough. What we did last year was not enough. And Now we want to do, you know, seven or eight times as much.
Yeah. Tamika, how do you see this? You've worked on different sides of this. You were the CEO of Hamilton Families, which was a homeless, helping homeless families. You were also, I think, chief of staff to Mayor Libby Schaaf. So you've seen it from the government side. Do you see this as something that is a national model potentially? Is it like what are the pros and cons of things as you see them right now?
Well, thank you for the question, Scott. And I have to say, I really appreciate both Aaron's synopsis and what Jason's been talking about this hour around the fact that this is a start. You know, we have, in my opinion, maintained and tolerated our neighbors living outside for decades. And when we were met with a health crisis and a governor and staff who were willing to take some risks and figure out how to respond quickly and keep our neighbors safe while simultaneously taking advantage of the opportunities of these vacant hotels and motels. That was a critical step. And I think what was profound about it was what All Home has been talking about, which is Project Room Key was really interim housing. It was the first step to bring people off the street quickly, which is a key component to addressing the homelessness crisis. We were able to provide supportive services, meal service, all of those things in partnership, frankly, with the federal government, which prior to this administration had really disinvested in helping jurisdictions across the country address their homelessness crisis, really for the last 20 years. So I think that there are key ingredients about Home Key and Room Key that can be scaled, that are proven to be working, but it's a component of the puzzle. The permanent housing that Home Key will now deliver in its acquisition and rehab is another key component of the puzzle. You can't just bring folks in temporarily and not be able to provide permanent homes for folks. And because we have had such a shortage of deeply affordable housing for people with extremely low incomes, we have compounded our challenge. And those who experience homelessness, when I was working at Hamilton, for every family that I would house, three more would become unhoused in the same period of time. So we also have to be looking at prevention, which is the other component, in my opinion, that needs to be this more comprehensive approach. So Home Key and Room Key really introduced ways that we reduced the barriers. We made it faster and cheaper to bring housing online. We brought neighbors inside and provided them an opportunity to heal and begin to resolve some of the trauma that they were experiencing. And it requires a much more comprehensive strategy. And I think that this is a really important first step.
Well, I want to bring in somebody now who can give us sort of a firsthand account of what these programs are like. Sheldon Cowan is a client of Project Room Key. He is currently living at the Motel 6 in San Rafael. And Sheldon, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, hello.
Let me just begin by asking you, how did you end up living on the streets?
I was a private music teacher for about 10 years, and then some of my students dropped off. I started waiting tables, still had a couple of students, and then in 2019 in the summer, I had been living in Corte Madera, renting a room from a guy, and we just had an altercation. He kind of blew it out of proportion, and filed a restraining order on me, which landed me homeless. And then the sheriff showed up at my job three times in the same week to serve the restraining order, so I got fired as well. And
this was 2019?
In July.
Okay.
And I've had alcohol issues my whole life, and so I handled it pretty badly. In retrospect, maybe a normal person might have lost it for about a week and then pulled themselves up, but I lapsed into homelessness.
And how did you get connected to Project Room Key?
About 2 months ago, I was homeless, living in a park in San Rafael, and I was really struggling. And so I put myself into a detox called Helen Vine here in Marin, and spent a couple of weeks there. And there's a lot more caseworkers helping the homeless people than there ever were before. And so somebody shepherded me in here, one of my caseworkers.
And what difference has that made? You've been living now in the Motel 6 for a few months?
Month and a half.
What difference has that made for you?
It's made a huge difference. There's a host of things that you take for granted when you're in a house. And
like what?
To everything from a bathroom and a shower to a front door. These types of things can take up a couple hours out of your day. You know, it's like, where am I going to shower? Where's the bathroom? But to put it simply, it's given me dignity, which has led to stability, and I'm I'm a lot better off.
I feel safe
basically also because homelessness, again, there's a lot less police and a lot more homeless outreach people that come out to the places where the homeless people are. And that's how I acquired a couple of caseworkers, actually, while I was still living on the streets. Hmm. But sooner or later, the legal system would have sucked me up because, like I said, I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, once you get on a certain kind of probation with an alcohol stipulation, it's really only a matter of time before you get scooped up and end up in the system.
Yeah. Let me just stay with us. Don't go away, Sheldon. I want to ask Jason, this situation for Sheldon is he's in room key, so it's a temporary situation. So mm-hmm. how is a home key, like how does he get connected to home key and who gets chosen for home key?
So first of all, let me say, Sheldon, thank you for sharing your story. You know, for those of us who work in homelessness policy, it can often feel like we don't make any forward movement because, you know, 6,000 units against 161,000 people feels like not a lot. And then we get to hear stories every once in a while from people like Sheldon that remind us why this work is so important to recommit ourselves to. So thank you for sharing your story. I won't speak to particularly Sheldon's situation because we've just met now and I don't want to speak about him. But the idea is that every county in California or every community, local community in California is making the decision, Scott, to answer your question about who's moving into home key units. Home key units are only one kind of housing that local governments provide to people exiting homelessness. So you've got folks who can get a Section 8 voucher and move into a private apartment if that's something that'll work for them. You have other formerly homeless clients who are going to need more intensive services, even than what Home Key can offer. And in some case, folks need really sort of clinical-based settings. So there are a whole different bunch of different kinds of housing. Home Key housing is just one part of a much broader housing continuum. So in the case of someone like Sheldon, and again, I wouldn't speak to his case particularly, but in the case of someone like Sheldon, he'll continue to stay working with his case manager through the county, through the continuum of care, and find the housing placement that's right for him. And that may be Home Key, and it may be something else too, because everybody needs something a little bit different.
Yeah. Sheldon Cowan, I want to thank you for sharing your story with us and wish you the best. Hope your life continues to go on this path and into independence and sobriety and all those things. But thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. Glad to pitch in. Thank you.
You bet. Let me bring back Aaron Baldessari, again, housing reporter for KQED. You know, Aaron, for people who are hearing about this for the first time, they might easily think, wow, this is like a silver bullet. This is the greatest thing ever. But with any big government program, there are always downsides. There are, you know, disagreements about how well it's working and so on. Based on what you've been hearing, you know, for the past 20 minutes or so, what would you add to that?
Yeah. Thanks for that, Scott. You know, I wanted to just go back to something that Jason said about the costs. And, you know, it is true that Home Key appears to be coming in at a lower per unit cost than traditional new construction. And that may well prove out to be true. But it's a little bit too soon to know fully about the cost. When you compare it to new construction, you know, we looked at a project in Marin County. It was an office building conversion. And all told, you know, this project is coming in at $750,000 per unit. This is a Home Key project. And that's because, you know, it's going to need ADA upgrades. It's going to need seismic upgrades. They're going to have to put in walls and bathrooms and kitchenettes to convert this former office building into apartments. And so, you know, it may, you know, to give credit where it's due, this project is probably on the high end. You know, another project we looked at in Oakland was 17 single family homes that are, were converted into group homes. They came in at about $102,000 per unit, which is very low considering the high cost of constructing affordable housing. But there is a lot that isn't yet known about some of these projects, which are going to need more additional funding beyond what they got from Home Key to convert fully to permanent housing. So that's one thing. And, you know, as far as proving out the model, you know, we don't yet know how this is all going to shake out, right? One of the biggest looming questions for HomeKey is how these sites are going to be sustained in the long term. Where is the ongoing funding going to come from to ensure that in, you know, 10 or 15 years, me as a reporter is not writing stories about these projects going bankrupt or falling into disrepair because they don't have enough money for ongoing maintenance or that folks are not getting the services that they need. And so, you know, there is no real place for, there are a few places for nonprofit service providers, for cities, for counties to apply for when they are looking for operation, you know, funding for operations. The state did provide up to 2 years of operating funding for some projects that needed it. The applicants had to show a five-year plan for how they would pay for operations, but it's not yet clear, you know, what the long-term plan is. And, you know, when I speak to people who are actually operating these HomeKey sites, they say that they're kind of winging it. They don't really know.
I want to bring in our callers, our listeners in a moment, but let me give out the phone number again. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or if you prefer, forum at kqed.org is our email. And I want to, before we get to a caller or two, Heather Hood from Northern California Enterprise Community Partners, your organization focuses on increasing the supply of affordable housing, and it's well known and has been for a long time that California simply hasn't built enough housing of any kind, let alone affordable housing, which is subsidized, to meet the demand. And that is part of the problem for the incredibly expensive housing we have, but also the delays and the different factors like the environmental laws that are used, the NIMBYism. So when you look at something like HomeKey, how is it, you think, that these projects have been able to come online so quickly when we're struggling to get regular housing built and have been for decades?
Hi, well, thank you. That's an excellent question. You know, we have had such a difficult time getting housing and especially affordable housing built. And by that, I don't just mean new construction. I mean buying buildings that already have homes that are affordable and making them permanently affordable. These are long-term plays. In the pandemic, as was said earlier, there were buildings that were vacant, whether they were hotels or motels or commercial buildings. And so that was a ripe opportunity for sellers to make good use of the property and sell them, and for us to get the field and gear to purchase them. So we're very fortunate to have actually had that opportunity. And I think there's a lot more to go.
And do you share the concerns about that Aaron raised about the long-term viability of programs like this? When, I mean, right now we have depending on how you do the math, a $38 or a $76 billion surplus in Sacramento. A lot of that is going to be proposed to be spent on housing and these sorts of things. But, you know, that money's not going to be around forever.
Well, let's back up for a second. What we learned in this process, where, as Jason said, almost 8,000 people were housed in less than 6 months, was where there's a will, there really was a way. This was sort of an extraordinary coordination that got people housed amongst people who, you know, you could say there were essential workers, you know, just folks who were really heroes, who were inventing a solution on the fly. What we were doing as Enterprise was providing technical assistance to the jurisdictions and the nonprofit developers who were doing that work. And they learned very, very quickly. We all did. I think there is quite a lot to learn from the first round, and we can take that into the second round to do things much better. I am concerned, of course, especially about the operating funds that have been mentioned. Aaron was pointing out that only 2 years of funding was provided for some projects to operate in the future. We want these solutions to be really durable. We'll be able to attract jurisdictions and affordable housing developers only if they can see that they can succeed. So
right. I'm sorry to cut you off. The music is the sign to me that we have to take a short break. So hold that thought. We're going to come back with Heather Hood and Tamika Moss, Aaron Baldessari, and Jason Elliott from the governor's office. Give us a ring if you want to weigh in, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this hour, and we're talking about 1 year into HomeKey, the Governor Newsom's initiative to get homeless people into converted hotels and motels for more permanent housing. Joining us, Aaron Baldessari, housing reporter for KQED, Tamika Moss, founder and chief executive of All Home. Also, Heather Hood, vice president of Northern California Enterprise Community Partners. And Jason Elliott, senior counselor to Governor Gavin Newsom, advising him on housing, among other things. Again, I'll give out the number. It's 866-733-6786. Here's a tweet from Michael who says, I'm familiar with supportive housing for the formerly homeless. They include a receptionist, a room to socialize in, and studio apartments with kitchenettes, and of course, a lot of services. And he asks, do these HomeKey conversions have these features? Tamika?
Yes, great question. Yes, some of them do. I think the idea that the units will be converted to permanent housing does include on-site supportive services and you know, safety measures like the caller mentioned. I will say I wanted to lift up a point that Jason was making earlier, which is to say there are many different types of housing that people who are experiencing homelessness need. And what I think is an interesting moment in time is for us to really open up our thinking around what kinds of housing should be available to folks. Not everyone needs that deeply intensive supportive service model like permanent supportive housing. A lot of folks like Sheldon have a health crisis and income loss that really just needs deeply affordable housing that they can afford. And so I do think that there is a housing continuum, modular housing that Santa Clara County brought on through RoomKey is interim housing for folks. And they brought on 300 units in 6 months. The Mountain View project that I think Aaron referenced earlier is an interim family and single adult site with a childcare center and on-site support services. So I think it's important for the listeners to understand we need to have housing types that are responsive to people's needs and open up our thinking around how do we do that at a price point that is affordable.
All right, let's bring some of our listeners in. Let's start in San Francisco. And Todd, you're first.
Good morning. Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm a SRO resident of almost a decade, and I live in a room that's roughly 8 by 12 feet with a sink only and a bathroom and toilet down the hall that I share with other residents and whatnot. And one thing I was wondering is there any way to prioritize SRO residents to get some of these nicer amenities that are going on with the project that your guests are talking about? And also, I appreciate that your reporters are you know, looking into housing and homelessness and whatnot, because I suffered through this for several years before I got this place. However, they only seem to be scratching the tip of the iceberg as far as habitability, as far as cleanliness and, you know, violence and other things that go on inside of SROs in the Tenderloin.
Yeah. Todd, those are great points. Jason Nadia, let me bring you in on that, because Todd raises a good question. I mean, I'm guessing from a government point of view that the main focus of a program like this is to get people who are currently on the streets off the streets and into some kind of housing. But, you know, what about somebody like Todd who's living in an SRO in San Francisco? And as you can hear from his description of the room, I mean, I'm sure he'd like to live in a converted hotel or motel room with his own bathroom and everything else. So how do you prioritize these kinds of cases? Or who and who does? Who prioritizes?
Yeah, thanks, sir. Thanks for the leading question, because you anticipated my answer. And thank you, Todd, for the question. The answer, Scott, is that the local community leaders, the local governments, in this case, the city and county of San Francisco, will be making the decisions about how to prioritize that caseload and make sure that individuals like Todd end up in the least restrictive but most supportive setting that's going to work for any individual. And, you know, in some cases, and again, I never want to armchair diagnose what any individual may need. So I certainly take Todd at his word that perhaps an SRO isn't the right place for him. But again, just going back to something that Tamika mentioned and I said earlier, every individual needs something a little different. And in the case of HomeKey, as we roll out HomeKey round two and bring online hopefully tens of thousands of more units, there's something that we're going to be focusing on in fact, HomeKey round one did not include. And so we're evolving the program. And what we're going to focus on in HomeKey round two are building a whole bunch more units that are, you know, in sort of what we call clinically enhanced. So these are units for people who are suffering from very severe behavioral health issues or addiction issues and really do need a much higher level of care. You know, in the sort of parlance of wonkery here, we talk about them as board and care units or adult residential facilities, but places for people who need a lot more help than perhaps what they can receive in an SRO like Todd or even in a HomeKey unit. Look, in the 1960s and 70s, this state and many states around the country dismantled our community base, our mental health system. And there was a promise of creating community-based mental health where people could heal in their communities. But no one, not California, not really anyone else around the country, built that housing for people under conservatorship, for people needing that help, for people with really serious behavioral health issues. We're looking to build a lot of that housing with HomeKey round two. And in fact, we've prioritized $3.5 billion of next year's spending specifically to create these kinds of units. So while Todd and folks like Todd may want to move into a HomeKey unit, there's a whole other population of people who really need something much more enhanced to be able to be successful. And so we want to make sure we're building that too.
Tamika, what would you add to Todd's point? And people like him who are living in SROs, maybe they're not happy, understandably, with the situation they're in. But this idea of prioritizing, how do city officials, county officials think about this? How should they think about it?
I think it's a great question. I was a social worker in my early days in San Francisco with the Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation, working with folks who were living in SROs. And, you know, that is a form of stable and permanent housing in San Francisco. And so I think what we have to do is not make these false choices about what's more important. If there are habitability issues or quality of housing issues, we need as a community to address those. But we also have an imperative to sort of the life and health and safety of our neighbors who are currently unhoused. And bringing those folks indoors as quickly as possible limits their exposure to deteriorating health outcomes and the trauma of being unhoused. And so I don't think it's choosing one or the other. And this is some of the work, Scott, that we are doing at All Home, which is to say we need to be making simultaneous investments in an ongoing fashion in solutions that we know work. We know interim housing works. We know permanent supportive housing works. We know people can be successful in living in their own homes and paying their rent that they can afford. all of those need to be invested in order to address the population level reductions in homelessness. We can't do public policy where we're forcing choices one or the other, and we have to resource them all, right? And that's been another struggle. But I think in this moment in time, as Jason has articulated, we have a lot more resources than we ever have before to be strategic about simultaneous investments in prevention, interim housing, and permanent housing to really be able to make a difference in our communities.
All right, Todd, thanks so much for the call. Best of luck to you, and thanks for sharing your situation with us. Here's a comment from Libby, who writes, if the homeless advocates really want to solve the problem, they need to be honest and quit denying the issues of criminality, drug addiction, and mental illness, which may all be interconnected or singularly causing an individual struggle to maintain housing. I think we talked about that a moment ago. Because we, the public, see it with our eyes, quit lying to us, the taxpayers, about it being solely an issue of affordable housing. And Jason Elliott, you've worked at the city level and now at the state level. I know you were chief of staff to, I think, two or three mayors in San Francisco, including the current one for a time. I think anyone who works in this field knows that you have to be thinking about the whole person. It's not just about affordable housing. It's about what needs do people living on the streets or even in housing who have addiction and mental health problems, right?
Right. And, you know, to the caller's question or to the listener's question, you know, I think we have to be really careful about talking about people as criminals, right? When it comes to people experiencing homelessness. Look, I think no one is born with a desire to be homeless. Something happens in their life and they end up in that place. And for a lot of folks, those things can be childhood traumas or addiction or behavioral health concerns that are not addressed by the system. And look, I think it is certainly unacceptable what we're seeing on the streets in terms of encampments and drug use and so forth. It's simply unacceptable. But the unacceptability of the state of California's sort of streets doesn't mean that we should criminalize people for being homeless. I think there's a really important line that we have to be very careful to walk there. And what I mean by that is, look, if there is someone who is suffering from a broken leg, we in America know how to treat a broken leg. You go to the hospital, you get the leg set, you know, insurance issues notwithstanding, but we don't do the same kind of thing for behavioral health challenges. And when people have those behavioral health challenges early in life as children, those adverse childhood experiences can follow them for the rest of their life and are indicators, statistical indicators of homelessness in the future. So I think we have to be both empathetic and sympathetic to the situations that people find themselves in, but also we're not going to accept, and the governor doesn't accept, the situation on the streets right now. So how we can do both of those things. We can be compassionate, but we can also move people out of encampments, because encampments are fundamentally unsafe. Right. It is always safer to be indoors than it is to be outdoors for a whole host of reasons. And our responsibility in government is to make sure we have sufficient places to place people that are humane, that are safe and clean, and so forth. And that's really the challenge that we're accepting here, is not only to improve the behavioral health system to give people better outcomes, but also to create that housing so that they have a safer place to live.
Aaron, let me bring you back in. Aaron Baldessari, KQED housing reporter. As part of the series, you and your colleagues on the housing desk are reporting this week. You looked at other programs. We've been focusing on motels and hotel rooms, but you've been looking at, for example, a project in Mountain View. There's also, I believe, a Native American tribe that has gotten funding through this program up in Lake County. Just kind of round out the view of HomeKey, if you would, and give us a sense of what some of the other kinds of projects are part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that made this program really unique and enabled the dollars to move so quickly was that they were really flexible and allowed cities, counties, housing authorities to really tailor those programs to meet the individual needs of their communities. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about that modular housing construction, that, you know, modular project in Mountain View. That is, you know, a temporary shelter. It will not be, you know, permanent housing, but it is filling a need in Mountain View to move people quickly off of the streets and then help them transition to permanent housing. These three projects, the tribal projects, are also unique. You know, one of them is an apartment conversion. They're really responding to the fact that homelessness rates among Indigenous Americans in California is particularly high. So Native American people experience homelessness at a rate disproportionate to their population. And so these sites are really unique in that they're coming from tribal members. So they'll have, they're, you know, being really supported by the tribe and have a more culturally sensitive approach to providing housing than what you might receive from, you know, the county or the housing authority in those areas. But, you know, there's also former vacation rentals that are being converted into homeless housing. In one community in Riverside, there are mobile homes that were purchased to provide immigrant farm workers with safe and stable housing for communities that were struggling with, you know, sort of substandard housing and lack of access to clean water. So I think that's a really interesting and important project. But they're very varied. You know, there's some projects that are looking at transitional age youth or focused particularly on LGBTQ folks. And so
coming again, out of foster care, you mean, or just leaving their homes?
Coming out of foster care, you know, yes, absolutely. There's a couple other projects that are focused particularly on college students, foster youth who are trying to attend college and struggling with homelessness and affordability. And so there's a lot of really unique projects that really respond to unique community needs. And it'll be, you know, they sort of create a natural experiment. So it'll be interesting to see how these pan out.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones now. And Linda in San Francisco, you're next. Welcome.
Well, I'd like to, you know, second what was said by the woman who used to work for TNDC, Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation, and some of the other statements. I formerly worked with Social Security in the Tenderloin at a time when no one was homeless. We had some drug addicts, of course, not like now, because now the city allows them to have all kinds of cash in their hands instead of putting it into housing. We had,
I think, just to be clear, I think cash, Care Not Cash took care of some of that, but go ahead.
Yes, Care Not Cash was an absolutely excellent, you know, Governor Newsom, his current initiatives about home key and room key are right on target, and so was Care Not Cash. But we have a huge dysfunctional bureaucracy known as homelessness and supportive services that focuses on keeping people homeless while they go through assessment after assessment after assessment and so forth, instead of housing them. At my corner where I live, there are 130 SRO units. One of the buildings been for sale for over a year. The units are for rent, empty since the techies left. They rent for under $1,300 a month to techies, you know, with bathrooms and all. Instead, the HSH spends, you know, vastly more in order to keep people in tents.
Linda, I'm going to have to stop you there. We're almost at the end of the hour. But let me just ask Heather Hood, as someone who works on, you know, increasing affordable housing, acquiring properties and so on, what takeaways are there from the early months of Home Key and, for that matter, Project Room Key that can be applied going forward so that projects and buildings like the one Linda is alluding to there can be, you know, maybe acquired more quickly and, you know, cut some of the red tape that has really kept so many of these, not just supportive services, but even just affordable housing projects from coming online?
Great question. Sure. Well, we have 50 different operators who had a lot of lessons learned and can share those with those who, the others who will get into the work. For example, they would say things like getting ahead of very unforeseen costs and roadblocks and anticipating them would be important. That would take having flexible grants and not so many persnickety sources. The state was great, but others were a little bit difficult. Folks need additional support in the early stages of conceptualizing the projects to ensure success and get these planning and partnerships, relationships sort of sturdy before heading into some of the really complicated parts.
Yeah.
I'm
sure all of you, we could talk for another hour about all this. It's so complicated and there's so many layers to it, but I want to thank you all very much for a really robust conversation on a very complicated topic. Aaron Baldessari covers housing for KQED and is part of a series looking into Home Key and how it's working. Thank you, Aaron. Thanks also to Tamika Moss, founder and chief executive of All Home, Heather Hood, who we just heard from there, from Northern California Enterprise Community Partners, Jason Elliott, senior counselor to Governor Gavin Newsom. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, Scott.
And thank you also to Sheldon Cowan, who called in earlier from San Rafael, for sharing his stories. Thanks so much for listening, and stick around because we have another hour of Forum coming up with Mina Kim. They're going to be talking about 40 years after the start of the AIDS epidemic. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.